Mr. Chairman, thank you. Let me further understand as well. The president asked for $1.7 billion. We added $1 billion. Is this in the president's request, the card that you've given us? Has he requested this, or you are asking for this on top of that?
No, ma'am. This is additional resources. This list represents unfunded requirements that we need to buy down risk or to mitigate risk that is not addressed in existing.
So the president has not requested the funds that you need in order for our garden reserve to be able to.
Well, I wouldn't say it that way. I would say that even though there is considerable funds programmed, probably historically high numbers, it still does not fully address the requirements. And I think that if I were asked, can we mitigate risk that it still exists in the budget, I think that this card would answer the question, and then this body could decide how much, how deep they want to mitigate the risk.
This is a six-year figure, isn't it?
Yes, sir, it is.
Thank you.
Well, I thank you, and I thank you for your candor today, General. I really appreciate your coming and telling us what you really need to make sure that these brave men and women are getting what they need to do, what this country's asked them to do. I was at Camp Murray in my home state 2 days ago and sat down with a large crowd of people, Guard members. Some of them had been called up, had returned home. Some of them were about to be called up. Some of them were family and spouse. And the stress and I'd say anger was at an all-time high. I've talked with members of our Guard many, many times over the last years. You talked about getting our troops ready. We've heard a lot about equipment, and I know my state's one of the red states, and we have earthquakes and floods and volcanoes, and I'm deeply troubled by that, and I don't know which state you're going to call in to help us when all the states beside us are red, too, should something like that occur. I think that's one whole issue. The issue of troop readiness is much larger than that, and that is about whether or not these men and women are physically ready to go back again. The brigade that is about to be called up knows they're going to be called up, haven't gotten their orders yet. I assume they'll get it in the next several weeks. I was told specifically that a number of them know that they have medical conditions that need to be taken care of before they can leave ground here. But the fact is they don't get covered by TRICARE until they get those orders. When they get those orders, they'll have about 4 weeks, I believe, until they are on duty. And in those 4 weeks' time, they will have to get a medical appointment and get whatever issue they know they need taken care of right now. I was told, for an example of someone who had an issue with, I believe it was a kidney, but had no personal health care right now, so he was waiting for his orders. But once he got those orders, he needed to call a TRICARE doctor in Madigan, which he knew he couldn't get into in the few weeks' time he had. But he was not going to not deploy with his men and women in it. He's not about to tell you guys because of his loyalty. I am deeply worried that the way we have structured this right now, with a lot of these men and women coming home with both visible and invisible wounds, are not going to be ready when we deploy them because of that condition that I just described to you. Are you hearing that beyond what
I heard? Well, yes, I am, and that's why I brought the command sergeants, major, senior enlisted advisors with us. That's what they watch out for. It's our obligation, it's our duty and responsibility to not take someone who is not whole to war. So if someone wants to withhold and we cannot detect a fault, I guess that could occur.
But, well, but I'm just saying we don't have the medical capability to.
Well, that's not exactly 100% accurate, and I'll try to make it totally accurate. Secretary Gates has made a very courageous decision on January 11th. He made a decision, we're going to call the Guard and Reserves up for 1 year, start to finish. And within that 1 year, we would alert them as far out forward as we possibly could to give them some predictability in their lives. When they are alerted, they get full health benefits coverage. We can identify the faults and fix them, and the government pays for it just as if they were mobilized in the past, and we brought them to some MOB station like Fort Lewis and then started working on them. So this allows them to stay home, stay on a job, and have the health care in advance so that they are ready when we call them. What also it requires is that we train those people and equip those people during that period of time, which means that the Army has got to move significant money and equipment from the post-mobilization model and give it to General Vaughn to distribute to Washington State now, so that the year that they're alerted, they're working on the equipment they need to work on, they know the equipment they're going to be fighting on, they're getting their health care done, they're getting their training done, so that when they are called, the time it takes to get them ready post-mobilization is dramatically shortened, and then they have to be back in a year, which means they'll only be deployed on the ground, hopefully somewhere between 9 months or 10 months out of that year, which to me is a much more reasonable time, which is much more considerate of the wear and tear on the mind and on the body of the soldier, even if they don't get hurt. Being in that hostile environment for 9 months, it has that wear and tear on the psyche and the physical part of it.
Well, I hope that's in actuality happening on the ground. It wasn't what I
heard. If you find any evidence that it's not, I would welcome you bringing that to my attention, because that will get fixed immediately. That is not what Secretary Gates signed off on the 11th of January. That is, if maybe what you're talking about was existing before then, maybe not, but that's where we are now. He has made a very tough call. He's listened to the citizen soldiers of the Guard and the Reserve components. He's sensitive to the partnership of the other two members of this partnership, the civilian employer and the family members, and he has modified against the bureaucracy of the Pentagon. He
well,
went against that and made that decision.
Okay.
So I have to give him credit for listening and collaborating with the Congress and taking a bold measure to address what has been wrong for probably five decades before he got there.
Well, I appreciate the answer. I'll just tell you that I have some concerns. We'll follow up
No,
with
that's
you.
Fair enough. That's fair.
But I think the invisible wounds of conflict, post-traumatic stress syndrome, traumatic brain injury are particularly troubling. And what you heard from Senator Dorgan is not a one-time or one-person issue.
No,
and
I would think it affects about 7 out of 10
yeah.
of our wounded,
and,
frankly.
And part of the problem is, particularly with the Guard, as I've heard them say to me, is that they don't want to be labeled with post-traumatic stress syndrome or TBI, not because of their service, but because of what they do outside the service, and they don't want it to impact their private employment with some kind of label that will cause them to have jeopardy in their
Absolutely.
Lives outside the service. So I think we have to be especially vigilant with the invisible wounds of war with these men and women, and I hope that you are...
I'm really glad you understand and appreciate that, because that is a... We are on the very beginning of even understanding how to treat and to make those people whole. We're just starting to understand what traumatic brain injury really is and what it produces and how to effectively treat it to bring them back to where they were before they sustained the injury. And it's not insignificant, because 7 out of 10 of our injured soldiers are injured by improvised explosive devices or that go
right.
off. Now, if they don't kill them, they may look absolutely perfectly
That's correct.
Whole, but
yeah.
they may have soft tissue brain damage that is tough to detect unless you really knew that person extremely well and knew how they would think and how they react.
And Mr. Chairman, this is a huge issue, because I visited the Polytrauma Level 2 Center at the VA also last week and had a chance to talk to the doctors, and there's no simple question you can ask somebody to determine whether they have traumatic brain injury.
They may not even know it.
They may not have even remembered the explosion, and they were telling me that many of the soldiers returning are in multiple explosions, and the continuance of that over time can have injury. But you can't just say, are you having trouble forgetting something? They might not even know it. Or their injury may be in a different part of the brain. And other soft tissue organs may also be impacted that we don't know about that will have future implications. So there is a concern in redeploying and not having those, making sure that we have really gone above and beyond the call
Absolutely.
To make sure we're covering those injuries. But that goes to the next question I had, because within this group of Guard members that I met with was a huge level of anxiety and stress, and I would say anger, about how they're treated when they come home in relation to the regular Army. They felt they were constantly being asked, are you in regular Army or are you in Guard and Reserves? And that the minute they answered that question, they would not get the same treatment. Whether it's real or not, it is certainly perceived. As long as that perception there is there, I think that's a real issue. And I'm deeply concerned about that.
I couldn't agree more, and that is certainly not anything the senior leadership of the military wants to exist or tolerate. And if you have any member has evidence of that and you get it to us immediately, that will be addressed.
Well, it's particularly of concern in the group of people I talked to in terms of health care. And there were people there who had been waiting to get their medical evaluation, MAMI-B and PB, for well over a year. And they were fighting low disability ratings. In fact, I know you're aware of this, but the fact that they are not getting granted full disability and having to fight that to get their disability was especially troubling to these people because it affects their outside personal employment opportunities as well.
If I have a second to respond to that, I'd just give you some perspective on it. I had a meeting with Secretary Gates on that very issue. He is very much aware of what you just described, and he is absolutely committed to not tolerating it. So he has a commission looking at that right now, and he's got a pretty quick turnaround. When he wants things done, he kind of looks at his watch instead of the calendar. He wants this done quickly. And what he wants to find out is this a cultural thing, or is this because the reserve components, medical records are on paper and the active duty are electronic, and then when the question is asked, it may not be to differentiate how you're going to treat them. It may be so that they can figure out how they're going to track the records. I mean, all of this is not as sinister as it appears, but I will tell you that there is absolutely, unfortunately, there are people that if they're not watched very carefully, then they may discriminate in their behavior, and people like myself and General Vaughn, General McKinley, and Sergeants Major are committed to making sure that that doesn't exist. And I will also tell you that General Casey and General Schoomaker and General Cody are as well. So if you will get the scout reports from your constituents that will be far more open and far more candid with you sometimes than they will with us. If you can share that to us, even if you want to take their name out and just tell us where the facility is, we'll go in there and look at it because we're committed to not making sure this does not exist. Yeah. It should be one standard of care, and one standard of treatment.
Well, we have a long ways to go, I can tell you that, and I am very concerned. I'm concerned about the implications of our equipment and supplies. I'm concerned about how these men and women are being treated. I'm concerned that we are sending people back into conflict, especially with invisible wounds that they can't identify, don't know, their family members don't know. Traumatic brain injury is a perfect example. They might not even know it. The post-traumatic stress syndrome, because of the labeling of that, is a huge issue, especially for our Guard and Reserve members. And frankly, Mr. Chairman, we are having a hearing tomorrow, a joint hearing with the DOD and VA to talk about this whole disability rating. But we have a long ways to go to make sure that these men and women are not given a low disability rating that will impact their lives forever. And we shouldn't have them sitting in medical holds fighting some kind of bureaucracy to get through that. That is ridiculous. They've gone to fight a war. They shouldn't be fighting their own country when they return. So I'm very, very concerned about this. And, Mr. Chairman, you know we have got a lot of work to do on this. I want you to know these are brave men and women. They're courageous. They want to fight for their country. They want to do what's right. But I am deeply concerned that the President is not requesting what we need for facilities, and we are, you know, fighting backwards to try and get them what they need, and sending them into conflict unready is just not the American way. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.